Well, good morning, TNC family, on this second Sunday in January, where today here we're in a five-part series called 2025 Year of Courage, rooted in the scriptures and 1 Chronicles chapter 28, verse 20, where King David, the shepherd, musician, slayer of Goliath, and as 1 Samuel chapter 13 and the book of Acts tells us, a man after God's own heart, a man of humility and trust in God, David is advising his son Solomon, who's about to embark on a very difficult and challenging and historic year, which will include succeeding to the throne, leading a nation, also building a temple, a place for God to dwell among the people. And in verse 20, David says to Solomon, his son, "Be strong and courageous, and do the work. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord God is with you. Be strong and courageous." And that just seems to me to be the right counsel for us this year. So last week we talked about the courage required to be truly and humbly curious, a quality that is evident across generations and cultures in good students, scientists, artists, inventors, problem solvers, healthy relationships, and disciples of Jesus. You see this in the book of Acts, in the churches, and you see this in the life of Jesus himself. Curiosity is a God-honoring quality. Today, though, because we're talking about five courageous choices in these 5 weeks, today I want to teach on the courage required to discipline your senses. The courage to discipline your sight, sound, taste, touch, and smell. Because how you see, hear, taste, feel, and smell is directly related to the formation of your mind, your character, and your life. You are shaped by what you take in and by how you take it in. In fact, if you're a human being, it's the only way you're shaped. Which leads me to a story in the 2010 book called The Me I Want to Be by John Ortberg, the best-selling spiritual writer with a PhD in clinical psychology. He writes chapter 9, "We once lived across the street from a couple who did not get along. The husband was a security guard. His passion was to be a bodybuilder. He was strong, sarcastic, and self-centered, and not kind to his wife, who was small, timid, and angry. He left for work every morning at 6 a.m. with a lunch in hand that she had made for him when she woke up at 5 a.m. We wondered why she did this for her husband day after day after day, until she explained to us that she secretly packed his lunches, this bodybuilder's lunches, with high-calorie, high-fat foods. Oh, he wanted high-fiber, low-fat foods, but she made his organic turkey with low-fat mayonnaise, with regular turkey and regular-fat mayonnaise, and she added sugar to his yogurt, and made his protein shakes with half and half. And he worked out a lot, but he could never understand why his body didn't look like what he had hoped. He never knew she was larding him up when he wasn't looking." Ortberg goes on, "Because it doesn't matter what you think is going into your body, it's what is actually going in that will ultimately form it. You may not like this truth or heed it, but you can't evade it. Bodies get shaped by what goes into them." And then this, "And it's the same with your mind. Your mind will be shaped by whatever you feed it." Now, TNC, here's the question for us to start today. Are you aware of what is going into the lunch of your mind? Are you aware of what you're feeding your soul? Because the problem is, many folks aren't. They look, but they don't see. They listen, but they don't really hear. They touch without feeling, eat without tasting, and inhale without an awareness of aroma or fragrance. Jesus makes this point in many places, including Matthew 11 and 13, Mark 4 and 8, Luke 8 and 14, where he will teach something, and then Jesus will end the teaching with, "Whoever has ears, let them hear." Which is not a biological statement. People generally had ears in the first century. This is Jesus saying, if you're really listening, I'm dropping some powerful and provocative hints about the present availability of a new kingdom, a new age, a new covenant, in which God has returned at last, and you can encounter divinity in many things, not just in churches and temples and synagogues, which is what people believed at the time. But Jesus says, with my arrival, you can now encounter God everywhere, under fig trees, along beaches, at the tops of mountains, in long stretches of barren desert, in fields of lilies and trees with birds, along busy intersections, in elevators, waiting rooms, restaurants, in conversations with perfect strangers, and by just paying attention to shrewd business managers, for example, because God is now walking among his people again, but you'll have to have ears that hear, and eyes that see, and hands that feel, and you'll have to sharpen your senses, discipline your senses, or you'll be like the folks, Mark chapter 4, who are always seeing, but never perceiving. Their eyes see, but they're not disciplined to perceive, Jesus says. This reminds me of Anne Lamott's wisdom from our summer reading series and her book with that one word title, Somehow, in which she writes that she has come to learn that, quote, 80% of everything that is true and beautiful in life can be experienced on any 10-minute walk. Can be experienced. It's not inevitable because, well, how disciplined are your senses? This is a point the Apostle Paul makes in Romans chapter 8, where he says, those that live according to the sinful nature have their minds focused on what that nature desires, but those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds, their senses focused on what the Spirit desires. So you have the same external situations going on, Paul says, but in one case, your mind is disciplined to pick up on what the Spirit of God is doing, and in another, your mind is undisciplined and unable to see what the Spirit of God is doing. The question is, will you have the courage to do the work of disciplining your senses? Now, there's lots of ways to do this. There's a whole genre of brilliant writing surrounding what are known as spiritual disciplines that take you from the world of yoga and meditation to the wisdom of the Eastern religions to the work of folks like Thich Nhat Hanh and Eckhart Tolle. And in the Christian world, the best on this I've ever read is from Dallas Willard and Richard Foster. But I want to mention now three ways to discipline your senses that are not from that field, not from that genre of writing, mostly because I think these three ways that I want to talk about are going to feel very fresh and challenging and less familiar to us than those ways that you might already know about and you may not need me to remind you of. So, here are three ways to discipline your senses. Number one, compare and contrast. Compare and contrast. One of the best classes I ever took in college was called Listening to Music. It was a 400-level class for seniors finishing their music degrees, and what we did for an entire semester was, each week, each class period, for 90 minutes, that session was devoted to listening to just one composition over and over and over. Bach's Brandenburg Concerto, number 4, for example. And we listened to a performance of it, first by a group from Germany, and then by one based in Paris, followed by an orchestra in London performing that same song, then one in Philadelphia, then Vienna, one group using 20th century instruments, one using period instruments, one a full orchestra, one a chamber orchestra, one with a faster tempo, one with a slower tempo. And what you discover is your ears and your mind sharpening as you compare and contrast. It was amazing. Same music, but in the process of comparing and contrasting, you begin to notice subtlety and beauty and melody and countermelody and energy that you would otherwise have not picked up on. And then when you do this with other people, with classmates, and you say, well, what did you hear? Then all kinds of color and nuance and wisdom emerges. And the idea is, TNC, you can do this with anything and it will help you discipline your senses in general. Compare and contrast the paintings of Monet and Renoir, for example. Or with dark chocolate, compare and contrast a 70% cacao against 75%, or one from Belgium against one from Ecuador. Or, when you go on a walk, take note, what are the colors I see today? Or, how many different shades of green can I spot? Compare and contrast, and you will discipline your senses across all fields. Scientists and teachers, they tell us that comparing and contrasting things improves critical thinking skills, memory, comprehension, creativity. It helps you appreciate what is pure and lovely and good. Compare and contrast this conversation with that one. What made this one so great and that one less so? And how can I learn from the good one so that my next ones can add more value and love to a relationship? Compare and contrast this news outlet with that one. Because I hope, TNC, you don't get the majority of your news from a single news source, which is both lazy and foolish. Compare and contrast. Compare and contrast. It will help you sharpen your senses, including in 2025. It will allow you to perceive the winds of God's Spirit in whatever situation you find yourself in. Which leads to number two, a second way to discipline your senses. Listen most to the voices of real expertise. Reminds me again of the work of Tom Nichols and his book, The Death of Expertise. Nichols is a retired professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College. He tells the story in his book of one day when he was lecturing at Harvard University, and after the lecture, a student came up and they entered a conversation about strategic military affairs. And at some point in the conversation, the student says, "Well, your guess is as good as mine." And Nichols' response was, "Actually, your guess is not as good as mine." And in the book, Nichols shows how across many fields of expertise, science, law, medicine, politics, military affairs, people dismiss expertise, and they do so with frequency and with passion. But the truth is, and he shows this, experts are more often right than wrong. And yet people constantly search for the loopholes in expert knowledge that will allow them to disregard all expert advice that they don't like. Which doesn't mean you should trust an expert just because of her or his position of authority or power. No, most folks understand the dangers of only arguing from a position of authority, or of how dangerous it is to say, "This is true simply because I'm the one in the position of saying it." No, if something is true, it is so independent of the identity of the person saying it. This is why no true expert, if you pay close attention, ever really argues from the authority of their position. At the same time, if you or I are seeking wisdom, paying attention to one's position and length of time in it is a good place to start. For example, please don't say that the best basketball players in America are not in the NBA. I mean, is it possible to find someone outside the NBA who's a great basketball player? Of course. But it is simply a fact that if you had to find the best basketball players in America, in the world for that matter, you would be wise to start with the NBA. And when I go for my annual medical physical in a couple weeks, it is appropriate for me to assume that those at the office with degrees and certifications and experience know their field better than I do. Or when I talk to my brother-in-law, a corporate lawyer, about corporate law, it is proper for me to assume the position of a learner in areas of his expertise. TNC, there simply is such a thing as expertise, and to not acknowledge this, it's just silly. And quite honestly, you'll embarrass yourself and ruin most situations you're in when you act like an authority in a field you're not. And please don't say, "Well, I do my own research." Because what you don't mean is that you're going to run the relevant experiments in the chemistry lab yourself, or that you're going to study and pass a bar exam yourself, or that you're going to translate that text from ancient Hebrew to English yourself. What your phrase, "doing my own research," usually refers to is the effort to sort through information, mostly online, when you don't want to trust what most mainstream experts have to say. And so you go searching for other voices that are telling you what you want to hear or in a way you want to hear it. But what I'm saying is, if you think you found a guy at the North Pole who says he can cure your cancer, but you don't trust what the Mayo Clinic and the Cleveland Clinic and Emory University say about vaccines, for example. And so now you're afraid to get your kids vaccinated because you've listened to 9 hours of a politician on X, TikTok, or Joe Rogan, and now you've started trusting them as a viable new authority. I mean, come on. Be honest. Most of the time, if you no longer trust the experts, you started trusting that podcaster who used to be a WWE wrestler or that YouTube channel hosted by your neighbor's second cousin. And honestly, you need to do a better job of disciplining your senses and know that most of the time we are wisest to trust that most people do their work honestly and responsibly and their conclusions aren't made up. That they didn't devote their entire careers to living out and perpetuating an elaborate lie. What an exhausting way to live. So, have the humility and courage to pursue and listen to the voices of real expertise, those who have been trained in the relevant disciplines, through real institutions, and have been peer-reviewed and have practiced their craft for some time, because those are the experts that offer the best hope of wisdom in any given field. Number one, compare and contrast. Number two, listen to the voices of real expertise. Sharpen your senses, which leads to a third way to discipline your senses. Number three, make peace with your strengths. Because often, pastors and churches like to quote Matthew 7, take the plank out of your own eye before you see to take the speck out of others. Focus on what's wrong, the plank in your eye. Or Romans 12, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but view yourself with sober judgment. Two passages that are rightly brought to folks' attention in our day, but I think there's a problem on the underside of that, which is we sometimes don't think highly enough of ourselves. And I'm not suggesting that you look in the mirror and say, I am almighty, or look at all my accomplishments, all due to me, or I am right and you are wrong. No, but I am suggesting that you should acknowledge that as a human being, made in the image of God, made with a mind and gifts and a free will and the ability to add beauty and work hard, that much of who you are and much of what you accomplish, you should feel good about. I mean, imagine for a moment if my son, when he was a child, went to class every day, studied hard, and passed a class with an A. And then what if I said, son, that is no credit to you, you worm. It's because of me, your dad. I brought you into the world. I feed you. And if I see you feeling good about your hard work, I'm going to make sure to cause you to stumble next semester because your pride will come before a fall that I cause. I mean, how horrible is that? And I imagine God feels the same way about us. I think the Bible makes clear, God feels great pride in you when you do something wise or something well. God doesn't want you to call yourself a worm and to grovel in the dirt. And so the challenge is, and this will take more courage than you think, will you make peace with your strengths? Will you ask about what they are, learn about them, seek wisdom about them, put them into practice? See, I think sometimes the reason folks don't like to acknowledge their actual strengths is because they want different strengths, or then they're responsible to use them. And if they fail or don't like them, then they feel embarrassed or ashamed. But God calls us to have the courage to identify and evaluate and make peace with our strengths. Psalm 34, verse 8, taste and see that the Lord is good. Taste and see. And feel and smell and hear that the Lord is good. How? Sharpen your senses. Compare and contrast. Find the voices of expertise and make peace with your strength. These three activities are activities that will require courage and work, but they can help usher in a greater 2025. And now I pray that the Lord would bless you and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Would turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.